I was quite happy to be in the hallway outside Una's office, until I got a vid call on my wrist interface. What's up, Tony?
Plenty. Are you alone?
Yeah, I'm alone.
Good, because something's happened and I don't want anyone else to hear this. We found the poison, and it's not in the wine.
What?
Forensics went through the contents of the room. They did scans on the silverware and found traces of T&D on one of Fora's forks.
T&D?
Touch and die. It's a designer poison, boss.
Very expensive.
And it was on the silverware?
Just Fora's fork. One of them, anyway. There's so many of them at the play setting. I don't know how people tell them apart. This was really tiny, and it had only three tines.
That's the fruit fork. For use when a small dish of fruit or sherbet is served between courses to cleanse the palate.
I'd use a fork for sherbet?
A spoon is traditional, but apparently Gabia chose the fork variation when he prepared the settings. A rather bold choice.
Will you two shut up about the forks? Wait, W set the table.
What?
W set the table. That's his specialty. He was working right up until nearly the time of the dinner.
You're sure of that?
It's on the surveillance recordings. Harv just checked them. W told me himself that it took him 2 full days to polish the silverware. He's the only one who touches it. Gates, Tony. Do you know what this means?
The butler did it.
Hey, I wanted to say that.
Stay put. I'm getting an arrest warrant and I'll be there in 10 minutes.
That's one I didn't see coming.
Perhaps there's a reason for that.
What? I noticed Harv's hologram had changed again. His jacket was unbuttoned, far more casual than the norm. His hair was fuller than it had been this morning, and was a little disheveled in that I'm a genius and don't have time to comb my hair away. And I think the patches on his elbows were larger, too. Well, I guess it was better than him wanting to be a cowboy.
What was W's motive for the murder? What did he gain by killing Fora?
In case you haven't noticed, the man's not operating with a full set of chips. He probably would have wanted her dead because she used the wrong fork.
Perhaps, but I'm not convinced.
He lied in our interview. He claimed that Fora was always nice to him. But Opie said the two of them argued all the time. Even yesterday.
That doesn't mean he killed her.
You never know what will set a guy like that off. The police can link him to the poison. Case closed.
I still don't like it. Not only is it cliché, but it's also too easy.
What? I can't have an easy case?
Excuse me, Mr. Johnson. I'm afraid that the police won't find W when they arrive.
I'm afraid to ask, but why? A small indoor hovercraft pulled up beside me.
Because W has become a flight risk. Now please hurry. You need to get to the hoverport immediately.
So I guess the answer is no. I can't have an easy case. We made it to the hoverport in a couple of minutes. Sure enough, a sleek all-black hoverjet was warmed up and appeared to be running its last internal diagnostics before liftoff.
There's no authorization of use for that hoverjet.
Can you stop it?
NFAA regulations allow me control over only personal hovercrafts. I'm allowed only limited interfacing with hoverjets.
You control the overhead doors for launches, right?
That is correct.
Good. Keep them closed. Harv and I will handle the geriatric killer. Harv's hologram pretended to run alongside me, but his feet didn't touch the ground, so it kind of blew the illusion.
I still don't like this.
Neither do I, but we have to keep W here until Tony shows up.
No, I mean our assumption that W is the killer. It doesn't feel right.
It doesn't feel right?
Fine. It doesn't compute.
He's running away. That sort of indicates that he's done something wrong. We'll worry about making the case later. Right now, we need to keep him here. The jet door was closed, and the stairs leading to it were folded inside the cabin in preparation for launch. I popped my gun into my hand and aimed it at the barred door. Do I have enough firepower?
The door is reinforced. Use a concentrated maximum blast.
Big bang, tight. The door splintered inward as the blast obliterated a small portion of the jet. Being careful not to touch too much of the charred debris, I hopped into the newly made hole and pulled myself into the main cabin. The blast had shorted out part of the electrical system, so the lights were off in the passenger area. The cockpit, however, was still alive and kicking, and that's where I found W. He'd just risen from the pilot seat and was turning toward me.
Mr. Johnson, what are you doing here?
Hello, W. I have some friends coming over soon, and I was thinking that we might all want some tea.
I'm afraid I can't help you with that right now. I have a previous engagement.
Sorry, W, but your attendance at this party is mandatory. And I... Doss, can we just skip over the snappy banner and cut to the chase?
I'd prefer it, actually.
We found the poison. I aimed my gun at him.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I thought we were going to skip the banner.
Oh, that's right, sorry. Forgive me, I'm new at this.
Fine, we'll talk about it later. Right now, the police are on their way, so let's not make this any uglier than it already is. Power down the jet. I'll help you back to the main building, and we'll meet the police together.
Perhaps that would be best.
Then he gave me a smile that sent a chill down my backbone.
But I think not.
He spun around quickly, more quickly than I thought him capable of, and stabbed a button on the main console.
Launch sequence initiated. Vertical launch in 1 minute.
The craft lurched, throwing me off balance. W kept his footing and actually leapt at me. I was too stunned by his sudden movements to do much of anything.
What the?
He kicked the gun out of my hand and then hit me in the face, spinning me around as I tumbled to the floor.
I'm getting out of here, and no third-rate detective is going to stop me!
He threw another kick at me, but I managed to get an arm up on this one and grab his well-loafered, unusually heavy foot.
Just for the record, I'm a second-rate detective, and you're a cold-blooded killer!
I gave his leg a heave, and he fell backward toward the cockpit. He scrambled to his knees and started crawling toward the jet controls. I jumped him from behind, and the two of us began wrestling on the floor.
I know the when and the how. What I'm looking for now is the why. Why did you kill Flora?
Because she was a disrespectful little bitch. A spoiled, egotistical, haughty, arrogant, superhuman bitch.
That describes all of the quads, doesn't it?
You're right. Did I mention she was blackmailing me?
He broke free of my grasp and stumbled toward the controls.
No, you forgot that one.
Forgive me. I've been embezzling funds from owner for several years now. Cleaning supplies for cutlery and silverware aren't nearly as expensive as owner thinks they are. Flora found out and threatened to tell her. I couldn't let that happen.
He stabbed another button on the cockpit console, and the jet shook again as the engines fired in preparation for liftoff.
Being dismissed by one's employer is a very black mark on a butler's published resume.
As opposed to embezzlement and murder?
Excuse me, boss, but I feel it important to note here that the hoverjet is now officially engaged in its liftoff mode, and that the heat of the thrusters will likely incinerate this entire hangar, unless you allow the computer to retract the rooftop doors and open a launch hole in the force field.
Open the doors, Harv, but keep the force field intact!
But
do it!
And by the way, I suspect that W's actions are being artificially augmented.
Figured that out, did you?
The hangar itself started to vibrate as the massive overhead doors began to open. W smiled as the jet received the official green light for liftoff, and he stabbed the launch button. The jet shuddered again and slowly rose into the air. I got up from the floor and pulled W out of the cockpit seat.
You won't get very far in this thing with that gaping hole on the side, you know.
Then I'll patch it with your corpse!
I stumbled farther back into the cabin.
Why embezzle funds? What could you possibly want that badly?
Well, you see, I'm getting old in years now.
Yeah, I'd noticed that.
And I was growing tired of my feeble body.
He turned to me, and I saw his body begin to tremble, as though his joints were pulling themselves apart.
So I traded in my old body for something new!
He stretched his hand out menacingly, and I saw his arm begin to stretch. The fabric of his daycoat ripped as the arm turned inhumanly long, stretching toward me, a white-gloved tentacle of death. I could see now the metallic sheen of the skin beneath the torn shirt and jacket as his hand grabbed me by the throat.
You bought an android body?
I made the transfer last night. You'd be amazed how much a good body costs these days.
The hoverjet leveled off at a 30-meter height and began to idle, hovering over the compound like a black metallic cloud.
This body is simply amazing!
Do you know how quickly I can now do a formal setting for 12? The possibilities simply stagger the imagination!
Well, you can take the brain out of the body, but you can't take the butler out of the brain.
He turned and extended his other arm a few meters and engaged the forward thrusters. Through the cockpit window, I could see that we were headed toward the force field wall near the camouflaged main gate.
Computer, open a launch window in the field.
Request denied.
What?
Mr. Johnson has overridden all hangar and force field access. I'll need the command from him.
You know, Johnson, 30 years ago, I could have thrashed you thoroughly with my original body.
Yeah, but you would have looked kind of ridiculous beating up an 8-year-old kid.
Have the computer open a window in the field.
No.
Open the window!
Boss, please. You don't get paid if you die.
W pushed me hard against the wall of the cockpit. Ooh. He and I locked eyes, like two poker players over the last big pot of the night.
Do it now, or I'll flambé you like a cherry's jubilee.
Polish my brass, butler.
I stuck out my hand.
Come to Papa!
From the floor beneath the seat where it had landed, my gun responded and flew toward me.
Burn, baby!
A A white-hot laser blast hit W in the android armpit. This time, I was too close to the blast and felt a burn go up my arm. But W took the real brunt of the blast. His arm fell to the floor, and me with it. I pulled a hand from my throat and threw the severed arm aside. W grabbed at his smoldering stub, trying desperately to hold himself together, literally.
Careful there, W. You're likely to burn your other glove.
Glove?
I stepped past W toward the cockpit and reached for the power down controls on the thrusters, but W leapt at me from his knees.
Boss, that's it!
Not now, Harv!
W's elongated remaining arm wrapped around me like a droidish feather boa and pulled me away from the controls. I got off another laser shot, hitting him high on the right leg, where his femur would have been if he'd still had a human body. The blast cut through his droid circuitry, and the severed leg fell to the floor. W held tight to me as he fell, pulling me back down with him.
Don't you see? W didn't kill Fora.
Harv! He just confessed!
He confessed to trying to kill her. He didn't actually succeed.
I caught a glimpse of the fast-approaching force field wall through the cockpit window.
I got other things to worry about right now, Harv.
TND is a touch-sensitive poison. It has to make direct contact with the skin in order to get into the system.
He put it on her fork! She touched the fork!
But she was wearing gloves. Fora was wearing long black gloves when she touched the poison fork.
Doss, he didn't kill her.
Ow! W bit me on the shoulder. The jet's speed was increasing, and the force field was getting closer.
Harv, max up my armor. This is gonna get ugly.
This time, I cut W's droid body in half at the navel. Then I turned and sent a blast into the control panel. The failsafe program kicked in. The thrusters decelerated, and the craft shook like a San Andreas nightclub. We slowed, but not nearly enough. We were still headed toward the force field, and far too close to stop. There wasn't any time to shout a command to Ona's computer to open a window in the field. Ona's computer, however, made the decision without me, and a nano before the point of impact, I saw the force field warp itself open, spiraling like water down a drain, only in reverse, to create a hole right in front of our swan-diving hover jet, and we thankfully passed through. Right into the estate's main entrance. Yeah, the mountain pass that Harv and I had entered through 2 days earlier suddenly appeared before me, the holographic hills and rocks blinking out as the flaming out-of-control hover jet burst through them. On our way to the ground, we tore through a few simulacra as well, and by the time we reached the guard post and the gathered throng of press bots... Well, let's just say that the compound's carefully designed, created, and maintained camouflaged secret entrance wasn't so camouflaged anymore. Crushed the guard post and a dozen of the slower-footed press bots like a steamroller before coming to rest on the gravel embankment. The press bots, cameras rolling, all stared at the plane for a nano, then, as one, turned their lenses toward Ona's compound. With the holographic hillside projections disrupted and most of the hard simulacrum scenery destroyed, the compound itself was now in plain view, its purple force field glittering in the sun. A few of the press bots couldn't take the excitement of finally getting actual footage of the compound, and their circuits overloaded. They fainted like teeny boppers at a concert. And that, of course, is when the police finally arrived. Hovercrafts landed in a semicircle around the smoking remnant of the jet. Tony and 11 of his men jumped out, weapons in hand.
Hold all fire until my orders. Attention in the cockpit! You are surrounded! Come out with your hands up!
A handful of the press bots turned their cameras toward the smoking jet as the cockpit roof emergency hatch was kicked open, and I slowly emerged from within, dragging W's android torso behind me.
I want my arms back, you barbarian! They're expensive!
Zack?
I walked to Tony and laid the still-struggling W at his feet as the officers converged upon me.
What the?
Don't ask. There's your man. Feel free to arrest him. One thing, though.
What's that?
He didn't do it.
I left W with Tony and his officers. I think they sent someone into the jet to get his various missing limbs, and they took him back to the station house for booking. He may not have been the one who actually murdered Fora, but he made an attempt on her life, not to mention mine, so that counted for something. They were also charging him with embezzlement, grand theft hover jet, and wanton destruction of private property. Although he'll probably blame that last one on me. He also copped to sending the medieval armor after me the day before. So, all in all, his capture wrapped up a lot of things. Except, of course, the mystery of Fora's murder. Tony insisted that his men take me to the hospital. I've been to the hospital so much over the past few years that they have their own booth for me in the emergency room. I think they've also named a sandwich in the cafeteria after me. After a brief scan, it was apparent that none of my wounds were major, but Electra stopped by and I spent a while reassuring her that this case wouldn't be the death of me. It was evening by the time I got home. It had been a long day, but not a terrible one. If nothing else, one of the potential killers had been crossed off the list, so I had to believe that progress was being made. Nevertheless, I had a gut feeling that this case was going to get nastier before it got better. I sat down on the couch and kicked off my shoes.
You have two incoming calls.
Two?
Ona and Carol. Which one do you want first?
Let's talk to Carol first. I like her more.
Fine. Put the paying client on hold. You know she hates waiting. Oh. You know she hates waiting.
I'm sick of Ona thinking that I'm available at her beck and call. A little wait will be good for her.
You should have taken Ona's call first.
You're more important to me, Carol. What's up?
I'm going to be out of the office tomorrow morning.
Big test or something? I could tell she was thinking carefully about what she was about to say.
Nope.
Okay, maybe she hadn't been thinking that carefully about it. But I had that gut feeling that something wasn't quite right.
I just need a little time.
Fine. I guess I'll see you in the afternoon then.
Yep. And you should take an antacid for that feeling in your gut.
How dare you keep me waiting, Zachary?
The other call was from my assistant, Ona. I thought she might have some important info for the case.
Well, I guess I do owe you some gratitude. From what my computer says, you went above and beyond the call of duty today in order to capture W.
You're welcome. Sorry about the hover jet.
It's no bother. I have several.
And the hangar.
Repairs are already underway.
And the guard post, the state-of-the-art holographic projection system, and the specially constructed camouflaging simulacra.
We better just stop there, Zach.
I think you're right.
The Falwens hunted down the dozen or so press bots that invaded the compound after your crash. The press bots took some footage of the compound, but no real harm was done.
I'm glad to hear that.
Which brings us back to the here and now. Do you know anything about a sigil?
Sigil?
A symbol or series of symbols that Fora scribbled down before she died?
How do you know about that?
Well, there appears to be some mention of it on Entertainment This Nano.
The series of sigils, as seen here in an artist's rendition, appears to have been scribbled by the late Fora Thompson just prior to her death. We here at Entertainment This Nano believe that it is a clue of some sort to the identity of Fora's killer, and currently have our top minds working on deciphering it.
It was like something out of a nightmare. The symbols that Fora had drawn in the wine puddle, nanos before she died, were there on the screen beside Bill Gibbons' perfectly coiffed talking head. Pebcak! How did he get that?
Curious indeed.
It also appears that the new Frisco Police Department is ignoring this very important information. Truthfully, they seem to be almost totally unaware of its very existence. Whether that's due to questionable investigative skills or simple ineptitude is still unclear.
This is not going to go over well with Tony.
Funny you should mention Captain Ricky.
He's on the line, isn't he?
Would you like to take the call now, or should I stall him while you practice your apology?
Put him on. Tony was clearly tired, his hair disheveled, and his posture was that of a man who had definitely seen better days. His eyes, however, were furious. Tony...
Did you know about this?
Tony had no way of knowing I knew about the symbols. I could deny it. I could plead the fifth. Look, I'm not gonna lie to you.
You mean lie to me again? Zach, you willfully withheld evidence from me.
I didn't know what the symbols meant. I was going to tell you about it. I just wanted to figure it out.
You mean you wanted to make sure it didn't incriminate your client?
Tony...
I played straight with you, Zach. I gave you full access to our information, and this is how you repay me? You withhold evidence, and you make me and my entire department look like fools.
The words were especially painful coming from Tony. I hadn't acted maliciously, but that didn't matter now. I'm sorry.
Did you leak this information to Gibbon?
What? No, of course not.
How else would he know it?
Why would I give him the information?
Probably to help your client in some way. That seems to be the only thing you're interested in.
I'll make it up to you, Tony, I promise.
You've done enough already. As of this nano, our deal is off. You get no more information on the investigation. You won't hear anything from my department until we're ready to make an arrest. And for your sake, you better hope it's not Ona we arrest. Until then, you don't talk to me, you don't talk to my detectives, you don't talk to any of the investigators, you don't talk to anybody who knows anybody connected to my department. You are cut off from all information. You got that?
Yeah, I got it.
Good. And be thankful that I don't arrest you for this, Zach. I could, and I should, but I won't. And that's the last favor I do for you.
I don't think I've ever seen Captain Ricky that mad at you.
Yep, I reached a new high and lows. I really don't know why I didn't tell him about it sooner.
You are only human. The question is, what do we do now?
I stood up and redid the top button on my shirt. We're going to pay a visit to Bill Gibbon.
Now?
You and I discovered those sigils when we first got to the scene, Harv. We even destroyed them when we moved her hand.
What do you mean, we?
No one else should know about them. No one else should know any of the things that Gibbon's been reporting.
He's talking to someone on the inside.
Up until now, it could have been anyone. The coroner, one of Tony's investigators. But knowing about the sigils...
You think Gibbon's source might be the killer?
Maybe, maybe not. Either way, he's gonna talk to us tonight. Harv did some digging and found that Gibbon had a thing for young blonde women, so when I got to the ETN studio, I had Harv throw a voluptuous blonde hologram over me and presented myself to security as Gibbon's nightly bonus from the network brass for a job well done. Yeah, I dressed up as a woman, but I didn't enjoy it. You got a problem with that? In any event, I made it into Gibbon's dressing room with very little fuss. And even less dignity.
Couldn't you have projected a dress that was a little longer? I feel like my butt's hanging out of this.
You wanted to get noticed, didn't you? Besides, it's not even your butt.
It's the principle of the thing. I'm not a tramp.
Oh, that's right. You're just posing as a prostitute to get by security. I'm sorry if I missed that fine distinction.
Gibbon walked through the door just then with a truly gleeful look on his face. Over the past 2 days, he'd become the king of trash journalism. And as far as he knew, he was about to reap a very curvaceous reward.
Well, well, well. What have we here? Nice dress. Or should I say, lack thereof?
He was shorter than I'd imagined, and at least 15 years older than he appeared on screen. As he removed his suit coat and came toward me on the couch, he couldn't have been more full of himself if he'd eaten his own clone.
I assume the brass booked you for the whole night, doll, but I'm back on camera in 20 minutes, so we'll have to start with something quick and painless.
He slid his left hand toward my thigh, and that was all I could take. I grabbed his hand at the wrist and twisted it.
Fine. We'll make it quick.
He dropped to his knees.
It's your call on whether or not it's painless.
What's going on? Who are you?
Just a lonely soul in this world looking for love and a little information.
You're no prostitute.
Nice of you to notice, but I'm no saint either, so don't make me get rough here.
My wallet's on the table.
I twisted his wrist a little further.
I'm not a thief, and I'm insulted by that assumption. Apologize.
Sorry.
Good.
I pulled him up and tossed him onto the couch as I stood and barred his path to the doorway. He rubbed his wrist.
Where are you getting your information on the Fora Thompson murder?
Is that what you're after? Who sent you? The World Show? Rapid News? The Nano Gossip Net?
I grabbed him by the shirt collar.
Do I look like a journalist to you?
Oh, weather girl, maybe, but your breasts need to be bigger.
I pushed him hard back down to the couch.
I'm losing patience here, Gibbon, and I'll warn you, I didn't have much when I arrived. Now, where are you getting your information on the Thompson murder?
I'm calling security.
Fine. Bring him in. Let's create a scandal.
Oh, you think my having a hooker in my dressing room will create a scandal? Honey, you don't get out much, do you?
Oh, I think I know a thing or two about scandals.
I snapped my fingers, and my hologram disguise instantly changed from voluptuous blonde bombshell to rotund ugly battle axe. Same outfit, though, which I thought was a nice touch on Harv's part.
How about a kiss, baby?
Oh, my gates.
Then my form changed to that of an emaciated old woman.
Maybe we can go multi-generational.
Then the dress was replaced by a nun's habit.
Or ecclesiastical.
Or we can go with plain old weird.
Now I was a goat, still in the hooker dress.
You wouldn't dare.
Please, Mr. Gibbon, don't make me butt you there again.
Dear Gates, please stop.
I grabbed him by the shirt and lifted him up into my holographic goat face.
Then tell me. What's your source of information?
Gibbon turned toward the door with a look of fear.
Bill?
They need you to do teasers for the overnight, so we need you back in a little early.
I'll be right there.
Not if you don't tell me what I want to know.
Bill? Bill, you all right in there?
Please, this is the biggest story of my career.
And it's about to be pushed off the front page by news of your torrid affair with a talking goat. Who knew that you had such a penchant for animals?
What? No, I didn't. I mean, I never touched the animal. We just talked.
What do you mean by that?
Bill?
I'm fine. Give me a minute.
Bill, open this door or I'm getting security.
No, don't!
Gibbon made a move toward the door, but I grabbed him tighter, spun him around, and bent his right arm back painfully behind him.
That's it. Security!
Oh, spam!
Time's running out, Bill. Who's feeding you the information?
Gibbon frantically struggled to break free.
Never! Never! Do you know what my ratings are now? I can't. I can't! My contract's up for renewal next year!
As his knees buckled, he kicked me in the shin.
Ow!
I kicked his legs out from under him. And we fell to the floor with me kneeling on his back, still twisting his arm.
I won't go back. I could be the king now. The king of all media.
I thought you were going to keep a low profile.
Bill, what's going on in there?
Do you hear me? The king of all media.
I pulled harder on his right arm. His hand was balled into a fist. But his fingers unwrapped when the next wave of pain hit. I glanced at his palm, and I froze.
Holy Steve.
Two security guards, an ETN producer, and at least two network management types stumbled into the room to find a delirious Bill Gibbon on the floor underneath a goat in a dress. And thus was born one of the great showbiz legends of our time.
The king of all media.
But I didn't care, because I was still looking at the palm of Gibbon's right hand. The skin had singed like flesh beneath a branding iron. Not deeply enough to leave a permanent scar, but enough for me to notice the very distinctive shape. Gibbon didn't need to say another word. The grinning ape insignia branded into the palm of his hand told me everything I needed to know. One hour later, the cold night wind was hitting my face like the slap of a scorned woman. Half a dozen searchlights cut the thick gray mist around me like billion-candle ethereal lasers, and the hard pavement of 33rd Street, 97 stories below my perch on the crumbling building ledge, beckoned like an asphalt abyss. Bi-winged fighter planes, hidden in the folds of the mist, circled just overhead. Opie was two stories above me and climbing. His powerful fingers and toes were actually tearing hand and footholds into the building's outer shell. His jerky movements belied his desperation, while his quick glances toward me and at the circling planes revealed his fear.
It doesn't have to be this way, Opie!
Of course it does! It always ends this way!
His foot slid off the mist-slicked building shell and he stumbled, suspended in the air for a nano only by the gripping fingers of his left hand. I saw then that he was holding something in his right hand that looked like a small doll. Harf, go in tight on the right hand. Harf activated the lens in my left eye and zoomed in on Opie's furry fist. Sure enough, he was holding a dark-haired, faux leather-clad, little female-shaped doll with grayish skin.
It appears to be a foreign doll.
Great. As if we didn't have enough weird symbolism already. Opie regained his balance and continued climbing, moving quickly toward the lightning rod spire of the tower.
At least tell me why you did it, Opie!
I don't know!
He leapt and grabbed a handhold on the sloping metal base of the spire.
Do you want to follow him?
There's no point. He's past the base of the old TV tower already.
The dirigible mast.
What?
It was originally designed as a mooring mast for dirigibles. It didn't really work, though, because the winds at this height make mooring something as unwieldy as a dirigible very difficult.
That would be very interesting in its appropriate time and place. Harve, track Opie with a telephoto and project my voice enough for him to hear. Opie grabbed the base of the lightning rod and then stood at the building's pinnacle, defiantly waving the doll in the air as the gray planes continued to circle.
Top of the world, Ball!
I need to ask this, Opie. I need to know. Did you kill Fora?
What? Why would I do that?
And why did you talk to Gibbon?
I don't know!
You gave him information that you shouldn't have known. How did you know about the symbols beneath her hand?
I don't know!
You have to do better than that, Opie.
He turned his face to the sky as a plane zoomed past. He grabbed for it clumsily and nearly lost his balance.
I didn't kill her! I loved her!
Opie!
Another plane came out of the mist. Opie reached his gray hands out, slow and disoriented.
I love them all! I love them all!
His feet skittered on the shell in a desperate grab for safety, but it was no use. He nearly grabbed the ledge of the observatory on the 86th floor, but his hands bounced off the hard metal fence, and he went completely airborne as he fell to his curbside destiny. His body hit the floor of his habitat, terminating the program. The building vanished, as did the planes, the mist, and the entire Manhattan cityscape. It was replaced by the suddenly mundane-looking decor of Opie's habitat. Twas beauty killed the beast.
The decor program was connected to his subconscious, rendered in black and white.
King Kong, 1933. You have to hand it to him for sticking to the classic and not going with one of the remakes. I knelt beside Opie's motionless form and put my hand on his great shoulder.
He's unconscious. There don't appear to be any broken bones or internal injuries. Heartbeat and respiration are normal. He's fine physically.
It's his head that I'm worried about. You can come in now, Tony. Tony and half a dozen of his men, a pair of EMTs and a veterinarian, entered the habitat. They hoisted Opie onto an industrial-strength stretcher and slowly rolled him toward the door. Tony came over to me.
Good job, Zach. I don't think we could have talked him down without you.
King Kong only ends one way, Tony. He brought himself down.
Maybe so, but you gave him that chance. Who knows how many scenarios we'd have gone through without you. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Do you think he was telling the truth?
All of his facial tics and movements were consistent with somebody who believed what they were saying. I didn't detect any other signs of deception.
I agree. He might be prone to irrational acts and jokes, but I don't think he's a liar.
He compromised the investigation by making the details public. We need to hold him. At least for now. I'm sure we can hold him for obstructing justice and resisting arrest.
I'm certainly not going to complain. It was the end of another long, confusing day. I had shut down Bill Gibbons' stream of inside information and had mended my bridges with Tony, for the time being anyway. But the killer was still on the loose. And as always, that was my bottom line.
Huh?
Randy, do you know what time it is?
4:32. Why?
Forget it. What's up?
I had the police lab send me Farah Thompson's jacket.
A what?
I'm still running toxicology tests on the wine. I wanted to cross-check the wine in the glasses with the wine in the bottle and on the floor, and with whatever spilled on her person.
Got it.
The police, by the way, were very uncooperative today, which is kind of odd since I'm doing this work for them free of charge.
That was my fault, but I think I got it cleared up.
Good. It's one thing working free of charge. It's another thing entirely to do it amongst such hostility. I'm not good at social interaction under the best of circumstances.
We're getting off subject here, Randy. What about Four's jacket?
Oh, yes. I found no wine.
No wine?
No. Apparently, her glass tipped forward when she collapsed, so none of the wine contained therein actually fell on the jacket itself.
And that's what you called to tell me?
Not really.
Not really?
No.
Randy, is there a point here?
The point is that although I found no wine on the jacket, I did find microscopic traces of silicate carbon dust on the inside of her collar.
What does that mean?
To most people, nothing.
And to you?
There's a certain class of stealth weapon, an assassin-type smart dart, that, upon delivering its poisonous payload, quickly disintegrates into an untraceable silicate carbon dust.
A dart?
A computer-guided smart dart, which can be outfitted with any of a variety of fast-acting poisons.
And it disintegrates?
Very rapidly. Once fired, it turns to dust in less than a minute.
And it's undetectable?
Nearly, yes.
Then how did you find it?
Because I invented it.
You what?
I developed the smart dart during my weapons development period 2 years ago.
Who did you develop it for?
The World Council. But they only had a 6-month window of exclusivity. Then I opened the market up. It eventually caught on in the corporate world. Go figure.
Yeah, go figure. I don't suppose you can give me a list of the companies that purchased the darts, could you?
Zach, that would be a breach of ethics.
Of course.
But I can tell you who purchased this particular dart.
You can tell that?
I designed the dart, Zach. I'm smart enough to individualize and code each shipment.
Ah, you're brilliant, Randy. So who purchased the dart?
Ona Thompson.
What?
Ona purchased this particular lot 3 months ago.
Are you sure?
Absolutely.
That doesn't make sense.
It makes sense if Ona is the killer.
Well, yeah, but it doesn't make sense in a good way. What would she need with smart darts?
Maybe she was planning on murdering someone.
Yeah, let's see if we can come up with any alternatives to that. What else can the darts be used for?
Pardon the intrusion, gentlemen, but I couldn't help overhearing. Good morning, Dr. Poole.
Hello, Harv. Have you changed your appearance?
Actually, I have made some modifications.
He's entered an Ellery Queen phase.
Really? You've adjusted your holographic appearance to reflect a new area of interest?
That's within my program parameters, isn't it?
Actually, no. But you appear to be redefining your parameters. That's amazing.
Thank you.
And your new hair is nice, too.
I'm sorry. I thought this was going to be helpful.
I thought I should point out that there is another possible purpose for Ms. Thompson to have purchased the smart darts.
What's that?
Security.
That's it? Randy, where were the darts delivered?
Well, you can't actually deliver anything to Ona Thompson. Her residence is apparently a well-guarded secret.
Until recently.
The shipment was picked up at the factory, signed for by someone named Fauhan.
Ms. Thompson's co-head of security. Randy, can these darts be fired by bots? I mean, tiny bots?
You mean golf ball-sized spherical bots that float?
How did you know about those?
Because I invented those, too. It was during my security phase 3 years ago. I sold nearly 2,000 of them to Ona Thompson.
And those floating bots are capable of firing these smart darts, right?
Of course they are. Say, you don't suppose there's some connection there, do you?
Harv and I were soon back at Ona's compound, staring up from the ground at the Fauhan's floating security command center.
It would appear that the Fauhans are not presently available.
Yeah, now we just need a way to get up there.
You could port. I know you don't like having your molecules scrambled, but it really is safer than walking. It's science at its best.
Yeah, maybe, but if I can find another way. Harv pointed out a rack of equipment that was attached to the outside of the ground-based building beside us.
You could use the anti-grav discs.
I walked over, pulled a pair of the milky white discs out of the rack, and held them uncomfortably in my hands. I'm not really an anti-grav kind of guy. There must be an elevator or something.
Oh, please, boss. Control your techno-acrophobic nature. The center is straight up, no more than 25 meters. You'll be able to look through the window, and if you want, you can enter through the hatch.
I'm gonna regret this.
We can still teleport.
I guess it's not that high.
Good. Now turn the disc over so that I can see the interface.
The disc's interface was a small optic port located in the center of the underside. I held the disc steady while Harv shot a beam of red light from my eye lens into the interface.
I've reprogrammed the discs to obey your mental directions.
Oh, good. I set the discs on the ground and gently placed my feet on them. At my touch, I felt them attach themselves electromagnetically to my shoes. Then they lifted me ever so slightly off the ground. No.
Just focus your thoughts. The discs will follow your directions.
I steadied myself and looked up at the floating room overhead. Then I felt myself begin to rise. Slow and smooth, just the way I like it. Harv's hologram floated beside me as I rose.
I told you it was easy.
True, but you say that about everything.
That's because everything is easy for me.
Everything but humility.
No, that's easy as well. I just choose not to practice it.
A few nanos later, I had my nose against the plastic of the command center window, lit only by the glow of the many security feed monitors. The Fauhans were nowhere to be seen. I don't like this.
It's a big compound, boss. They could be anywhere doing their normal business. Their absence from the command center hardly implies anything nefarious.
Harv, everything about these guys implies nefarious. The fact that they're not currently in their own command center is the most nefarious implication of all.
You realize, of course, that even accepting the fact that the Fauhans are responsible for the smart dart, that wasn't what killed Fora. As you know...
She's nigh invulnerable. The dart wouldn't have pierced her skin. The point is that they tried to kill her, and for all they know, they succeeded. I want to know why. I stared at the security monitors. As before, the flashing images were an odd mix. The southern perimeter, the hover port, and a large room full of sweaters. The kitchen, the media center, an even larger room full of handbags and accessories. Every third image is clothing-related. Why is that?
Boss.
Is Ona so caught up in her wardrobe that she requested special security for it?
Boss.
I mean, I wouldn't put it past her, but it seems odd, even by her standards.
Boss, I think you're missing the big picture here.
What? I pulled my face slowly away, just enough to allow me to look at the window rather than through it.
and I saw a reflection in the glass of a golf ball-sized spherical bot gently hovering behind me.
See what I mean?
Of course, it wasn't the reflection of that one bot that frightened me. The real fright came when I pulled my gaze back farther and saw reflections of the other bots behind it, all hovering no more than 4 meters behind me. I knew this was a bad idea. I did my best to remain motionless, which is no easy feat when you're standing on hover discs 25 meters in the air, my eyes never wavering from the reflection of the bots behind me. My guess is they were not going to be able to talk our way out of this.
Agreed. Unless, of course, you speak spherical bot.
Don't you?
I'm learning it as we speak.
And?
From what I gather, they are saying, kill the intruder.
Well, that's not good. Contact Ona's computer. Maybe it can help us out.
I'll give it a try. In the meantime, I would advise against any sudden movements.
Just then, I saw a small red light on the lead bot flash. That's no longer an option.
Whoa!
All the sphere bots fired thin blue lasers at me. Thankfully, I was already on the move. I put my anti-grav discs into free fall and was 3 meters below the command center when the bots fired. Their lasers blew out the window, and I used my arm to protect myself from the shower of glass. I popped my gun into my hand as I barrel rolled and then leveled off in the air. The concussion blast from my gun blew apart 8 or 9 of the bots before the others scattered and realigned themselves into combat formation.
I'm gonna need you to take control of the discs, Arp.
Fine. What's the plan?
I have no idea. Just keep me ahead of the enemy fire and I'll wing it.
I see. The same strategy as employed when we do the tax returns.
What did Ona's computer say?
It said the bots are independent thinking organisms and therefore it has no control over them. It is presently trying to contact Ms. Thompson and locate the Thawans.
Oh, good.
Harv's hologram disappeared as he took control.
Whoa! Oh.
And I felt the discs surge forward and bank hard to the left.
Keep your knees bent and your head down. This is going to be a bumpy ride.
We flew hard toward the maintenance buildings that encircled Ona's ziggurat and snaked in and around the air filtration tubes, avoiding the lasers of the pursuing bots at every turn. A few of them broke off from the main pack and tried to cut us off at various junctures, but I managed to blast them to smithereens before the traps were sprung. Still, after about 3 minutes of the high-flying chase, I was breathless and more than a little airsick.
How many of these bots did the Falcon say they had in the compound?
1,300, but don't think about it. By the way, you have a call coming in from Randy. I'll take a message.
Yeah, that sounds like a plan. We banked wildly again and found ourselves headed directly toward the base of the force bubble. Harp pulled the discs up sharply, and we followed the curved edge of the bubble before banking away back toward the nearest building, which was the still-under-repair hoverjet hangar. I noticed, however, that one of the pursuing spheres didn't quite make the sharp turn. It skidded and smashed into the force bubble, bouncing off the translucent purple surface like sunlight off a mirror. It fell to the ground and short-circuited with a burst of electronic shrapnel.
Okay, I now officially have a plan. Contact Ona's computer. We're gonna need it to open a window in the force bubble for us.
Where?
I don't know yet. And slow down a little.
What?
I turned around and fired another couple of blasts at the pursuing spheres, blowing 3 of them to smithereens, which only left about 85 still in hot pursuit.
I don't want to outrun these things just yet.
Oh, I get it.
A laser blast hit my back. My armor protected me from injury, but it still felt like someone had jabbed me with a needle.
And keep me away from those lasers!
Easier said than done, boss.
Marv banked me hard over a small walkway between 2 buildings, and we found ourselves in a headlong run toward the force bubble wall.
The computer knows the plan, right?
I explained it in detail.
You trust it?
You don't have much choice at the nano.
Okay then, let's go. Just make sure they're close.
I put my head down and dropped into a skier's tuck position. Lasers cut the air around me like little blue scalpels. One singed my right ear. And one shot I took in the leg nearly collapsed my knee and crashed us. The spheres were faster than us, so Harv didn't need to ease up in order to get them close. On the contrary, he had to push the discs to their max just to stay ahead of them. I began to worry that maybe the straightaway to the force bubble was too long.
Get ready with the window!
We were close to the force wall now, but I could feel the spheres gaining on us.
Now! Duck it back, Harv!
The purple bubble morphed open a window, and I flew through it. Ben spun away quickly to the left and stopped short. The spheres followed me through the window, although some hit the force wall and exploded. They hadn't seen me stop and turn, so they shot past me. I lashed out and grabbed the last one through with my hand as it passed. It buzzed in my fist like an angry hornet overdosed on caffeine, and I felt it grow hot. So I activated the containment unit that's built into the pocket lining of my trench coat, a little something that Randy designed for me, and quickly stuck the sphere inside. An electromagnetic stasis field formed around the sphere, trapping it tightly and protecting me from any of its weapons. The coat's fabric expanded to fit the stasis field, and for a nano I thought the seams would split, but thankfully they held.
Back now and close the window!
The other spheres detected me, and realizing they'd been tricked, dove at me en masse, but they were too late. I slipped back through the window just as it closed, and the dive-bombing spheres crashed into it, exploding on impact. Harv guided the anti-grav discs back to the ground so we could examine the bot in my pocket.
We should make this fast. There are another 1,200 of these things still around.
True, but most of them are stationed inside the ziggurat. I estimate that only 100 or so are left out here.
That's about 100 too many.
I detached the containment unit from the coat. I held the stasis field up to the light and watched the bot inside as it skittered about like an angry goldfish in a bowl. It fired its laser at the field wall a few times before registering the futility of the action, and then simply began bumping the field itself.
What's it doing?
I think it's trying to lift the entire field.
Can it do that?
It depends upon the density of the field and the power of the bot.
What about firing its weapons?
It appears as though the stasis field is strong enough to withstand it.
Can it call for help?
The field is a no-transmission zone. Communications through traditional means are impossible.
So if it wants its programmer...
It will have to physically go to it.
Perfect. I put the field down on the ground and stepped back. It couldn't move, and the sphere wasn't happy about that.
Can you reduce the field density? Maybe make it easier for it to get off the ground?
I can, but that might make it possible for the bot's weapons to pierce the field, or worse, for it to signal others.
Yeah, let's risk it. We're sure not getting anywhere like this.
The mass of the stasis field decreased, shrinking from about the size of a cantaloupe to that of a grapefruit. As it did so, the bot was slowly able to raise it into the air, unsteady at first, but in a few nanos it was hovering at my eye level, and I felt like I was in a staring contest. What's it doing?
It thinks you're up to something.
It can think?
Not in the traditional sense. It has pre-programmed responses for certain situations, but this is most likely an uncommon scenario for it.
Fine. Let's give it a scenario it understands.
What are you doing?
I stuck my gun against the outside of the stasis field, giving it the simplest scenario of all. Fight or flight?
It appears to have chosen flight.
We chased the bot, I floating briskly along on the anti-grav discs, Harv's hologram beside me, across a good portion of the compound over the next couple of minutes. Every so often the bot would stop its flight and hover in front of us, as if making sure we were still in pursuit. We were still at it when Ona pulled alongside us in her personal hovercraft.
Zack! I heard you were in some kind of trouble. Is everything all right?
It's fine!
You didn't destroy anything this time, did you?
No! Well, actually, yes I did. 200 or so of those little security bots.
Gates, I hate those things!
Join the club. Right now we're hoping that the one ahead of us will lead us to the security experts.
The bot came to what at first appeared to be a small hill. It was subtly shaped and covered with thick green lawn and spotted with patches of purple and yellow flowers. The sphere hovered beside one group of flowers for a nano, and then disappeared through the morass of colored petals.
And I think we just found the nesting place.
I landed my discs at the base of the hill. Ona did the same with her hover, and we examined the hill together.
What do you want with the Fowens?
Well, I'm pretty sure that they're the ones who programmed those bots to attack me a few minutes ago. And we're also fairly certain that they tried to kill Fora.
What?
Poison dart on her collar. Tiny bots with attitude. Long story, but trust me, it points toward the Fowens.
They killed Fora?
I doubt it, but they tried.
Why, those identical twin bastards!
As we approached the hill, half a dozen of the tiny spherical bots appeared from the flower beds and hovered menacingly before us.
Uh-oh.
Why would the Fowens try to kill Fora?
I'm hoping that they'll tell us that when we find them.
Ona took a step toward the hill, and one of the bots moved toward her. I put a hand on her arm to stop her, but she shrugged it off.
They'll tell us, all right.
What makes you say that?
Her hand shot out and plucked one of the hovering bots out of the air. Then she crushed it in her fist.
Because if they don't, I'm going to turn their annoying little bots into anal probes.
Works for me.
Anal probes?
The five remaining bots quickly retreated back into the hill.
Computer, where's the entrance to this hill?
There's an access door beneath the holographic flowerbed 3 meters to your right. I'll need approximately 5 seconds to remotely access the lock.
Don't bother. I'll use my own key.
She stomped her stiletto heel, and I heard the metal door buckle. The hologram flower short-circuited under her attack and blinked out, revealing, as suspected, a heavy metal door in the ground, looking like the entrance to an old, heavily fortified storm cellar. Ona reached down and grabbed the damaged door with her finely manicured hand and ripped it from its hinges, revealing a stairwell underneath. She gave her nails a quick once-over for breaks or chips, then headed into the stairwell. Ona, maybe you should stay topside and let me handle this.
After all I've done for those two, this is how they repay me? By killing my sister?
Like I said, they didn't actually kill her, they only tried.
Granted, but it's still bad form.
Can't argue with that.
Boss, there's another call coming from Dr. Poole.
Now's really not the best time, Harv.
Oh, by all means, take the call. I'll save you some of the Fowen's vertebrae for your trophy shelf.
You're not killing anyone, Ona. Harv, tell Randy I'll call him back as soon as I can.
He says it's urgent.
My client's about to murder two suspects, Harv. I think that outscores anything Randy has to say on the urgent meter. The stairway ended at another large metal door with a small touchscreen. It's a DNA-encoded lock. It's probably programmed to give only the Fowens access.
I am the mistress of this compound, Zack. Everything here either obeys my commands or suffers the consequences.
She placed her hand on the touchscreen.
Zack, are you there?
The voice came from my wrist interface. Randy?
I convinced Harv to put me through. I found the poison, Zack.
You what?
Access denied.
All right, plan B.
Randy, tell me quickly about the poison.
The answer was there all the time. It was...
Ona hit the door with an overhand punch that sent a shockwave like a grenade. My head was still spinning, but I somehow managed to stumble through the doorway behind Ona as she entered. And that's when things got really weird. The doorway opened into a large circular room, shadowy at the edges but dramatically lit in the center with colored lights and spotlights. A throng of computer monitors crowded around the stage. That's right, I said stage. It was long, thin and covered with a red carpet, and as mentioned, computer monitors were packed in around its raised platform, like groupies in a mosh pit. Each monitor sported a computer-generated face, men and women of all colors and ethnicities. And walking the stage, with the strut of a genetically spliced peacock, was Drang Fowen, in attire that was, how can I put this, somewhat non-conventional.
Is that my dress?
The dress Drang wore was blue, made of some shimmery plastic element, cut low in the back and slit high in the front. I remembered seeing a picture of Ona wearing it at some function a few months before. It looked much better on her than it did on him.
This gown was designed exclusively for Miss Thompson by the Glamorama Strumpet Fashion Cartel for last year's Planet's Choice Awards. It was worn only once, although it was heavily saturated with Miss Thompson's sweat. The bidding for this one-of-a-kind item starts at 200,000 credits.
The crowd went crazy as Drang reached the end of the stage, then spun around neatly, wiggled his hips, and strutted back toward the curtain.
They're selling my dress!
Zack! Zack, are you still there? I heard an explosion, and now... Are you in a nightclub?
I think I'm in hell. Drang had disappeared behind the curtain, and Sturm had taken his place on the catwalk.
Next on the list is the benignly bitchy jacket and harlot-humping skirt ensemble made famous by Miss Thompson during this past spring's funeral rave for the former president of New Brazil.
I was wondering where that outfit went.
Zack, you have to listen to me. I found the poison. It was a designer toxin specifically created to kill only the Thompson quads. That's why we couldn't find it at first.
You mean it was in the wine?
We were checking the wine's contents against the database of known toxins, but this was an all-new toxin, so it didn't register. That's why the wine tested clean.
I knew it. I knew it was the wine.
But Zack, there's something you need to know.
What? Just then, the space's three remaining metal access doors blew apart. I looked up in time to see dozens of heavily armored policemen pour through each of the doors, weapons drawn, spotlights cutting the darkness. Someone, thank Jobs, killed the power to the sound system.
Police! Nobody move! Down on the floor! Hands above your head!
Then I saw Tony striding quickly toward Ona and me.
Captain, thank Gates you're here. These men tried to kill my sister. They tried to kill Zack as well. And they've been wearing my clothes!
Tony remained stone-faced as he approached, and I knew then that something was very, very wrong.
Zack, can you hear me? There's something you need to know about the poison.
Tony reached into his coat pocket and pulled out a computer pad, which flashed an ominous-looking document.
Ona Thompson, you are under arrest for the murder of your sister, Fora.
What?
Tony nodded to one of his men, who slapped electromagnetic cuffs on her wrists.
It was Ona! The poison came from Ona!
I spent the evening back at my house doing the post-mortem on the day. The police had taken Ona down to the station house not long ago with all the subtlety of a three-ring circus, and news of her arrest was wall-to-wall on all the networks. Ona had summoned an army of lawyers. I expected her to be out on bail by morning, but she was going to be charged with Fora's murder. The Falwins were arrested as well, but not for their murder attempt on Fora. There was no real proof of that, or for their attempt on my life, which Tony apparently no longer considered a crime. They were instead arrested for performing illegal online auctions. They confessed shortly thereafter that they'd been stealing and selling Ona's clothing for the past several years, referring to it as a sickness. Fora had known about their clothing thefts and had threatened to expose them to Ona, which explained their attempt on her life. I talked to Randy via vidphone.
So the wine would only kill the Thompson quads?
Exactly. We could drink it for 1,000 years and the poison would have no effect on us. But if any of the quads were to drink it, well, you saw what happened.
And the police arrested Ona?
Because the toxin was created specifically from her DNA. It could come from nowhere else.
I thought the quads had identical DNA, and they just occasionally dyed or streaked their hair to match their moods.
Yes, that's what most laymen think. But Dr. Thompson apparently didn't want his identical daughters to be completely identical. He modified each of their DNA just enough so that they would be identical, but different.
Identical, but different?
I admit it's a hard concept for the layman's mind. Let's just put it this way. It's easy to tell them apart if you know what you're looking for. Just follow along.
A holographic representation of 23 red chromosomes and 23 blue ones appeared on my screen.
Humans have over 3 billion DNA nucleotide pairs. These are usually divided among 22 pairs of autosomes and one pair of sex chromosomes. With the quads, all of their chromosomes are identical except for this area.
A very small area on one of the blue chromosomes turned yellow and started to flash.
This small area on the 19th chromosome is different for each quad. It's why they have slightly different shades of brown hair. It's sort of their genetic ID. This was the DNA used in the poison. To the naked eye, they are identical. But to the electron microscope, they're as distinctive as a fingerprint. Or
any other type of DNA.
Exactly.
Couldn't someone have created it by simply using her DNA?
Well, sure. If you had the right tools and a sample of her DNA.
So it's possible.
Zack, this is 2058. Almost anything is possible if you've got the time and the credits. The poison was quite pure, though. It's hard to get results like that from replicated DNA. Whoever made this poison had lots of material to work with.
Hence the police arresting Ona.
Exactly.
Thanks again for everything you did, Randy. I owe you.
You mean that metaphorically, right? I can't bill you for my time, can I? Because it would be expensive.
Good night, Randy.
Night, Zack.
I made another call.
What do you want, Zack?
Tony looked terrible, like something the cat dragged in, beat up, then dragged back out again. Why'd you bring Ona in?
Zack, her DNA was used in the poison. She was the only one who had access to the wine.
It's all circumstantial. Her lawyers will have her out in no time.
I know that, but...
You were under a lot of pressure to make some sort of arrest.
Yes. I personally was against it until we had more to go on. Das, we don't even have a cell that can hold her yet. But we have a new chief, and he wanted to make a splash. Lots of PR in arresting the world's richest being. Our stock jumped 5 points today. Sure, if it turns out she's innocent, then the stock will tumble a bit, but it's worth it.
Man, I miss the days when police forces were paid for solely out of tax money.
Not half as much as I do. You have no idea how often I hear, "You can't arrest me, I'm a stockholder."
So you know this isn't over yet.
Believe me, Zack, I know better than anybody. Between the press, her lawyers, our lawyers, my superiors, and the occasional criminal or two, it's been a long day, so if you don't have anything else to add...
Have a good night, Tony.
Yeah, easy for you to say.
My screen went blank, but it was only a nano before another call came in.
Boss, it's Carol.
Put her through.
Tio?
Right away, I knew she needed something.
I need some more time off.
Carol, this is a bad time for me. I'm in the middle of this case, and I might need your talents.
I'll stay in touch, I promise.
That was rather abrupt.
I'm sure whatever it is, she'll tell you about it when you need to know.
Three things I'll never understand. Women, size, and women.
Believe me, there are far more than that. So be thankful that you have me.
I turned toward Harv's holographic face with its know-it-all smile. I know that having Harv hardwired to my brain is an advantage. Still, at that nano, I couldn't help wondering if I'd lost something as well. The privacy of my thoughts. I don't really like to dwell on this too much because it scares me. But I share my brain with another thinking organism. There have to be some dire implications to that. Harv and Randy both insist that this is a good thing. That Harv can't read my thoughts per se, and that he just monitors the levels of certain chemicals in my brain and the activity of certain regions to gain an overall perspective of my general mood. They claim that he and I are creating a gestalt, becoming greater than the sum of our parts. That may be true, but there are times that I can't help feeling like the world's largest lab rat.
If you don't mind, boss, I'd like to do a little field work tonight.
On what?
Something Miss Thompson said today gave me an idea that might help the coroner.
I have a feeling he needs all the help he can get. I'll get him on the vid, and we'll set it up. Dr. Shakes was in even worse shape than Tony. Frustrated, frantic, and exhausted. This case was getting to everybody. But he was desperate enough to let Harv download himself to the coroner's system if there was any chance he could help. I'll be able to get you if I need you, right?
Oh, yes. Our interface is still attached to your brain.
Don't remind me.
I could even feed my experiences with the coroner back to you as they happen. It would be like watching something live on the net.
That's okay. Fill me in on the highlights.
Will do. I just need to finish up a couple of tasks here, and then I'll download to the coroner's office.
I spent the next few hours laying awake in bed and staring at the overhead computer screen, studying the symbols that Farah had drawn in the wine. Nothing about it seemed to make sense, and I was starting to lose my patience with the whole mystery, so I was grateful on a number of levels when I heard Electra come through the door and walk softly toward the bedroom.
You awake, Chico?
I'm conscious. That's about the most I can say. How was the clinic tonight? She slipped into the bathroom.
Hectic and frustrating. But we made it through. I heard the news about Ona. I take it that's bad for you.
Well, it's never good for business when your client gets arrested. She emerged from the bathroom in her nightshirt and climbed into bed beside me. She flipped over onto her back and stared up at the overhead screen with me.
What are we watching?
Forrest Dying Clue. She drew these symbols in the wine puddle just before she died. Maybe it's some sort of veiled reference to her killer's identity.
Why didn't she just write down the killer's name?
Because that would have been too easy.
So she spent her last nanos of life devising some arcane symbolic code?
It looks that way.
That's stupid.
Well, apparently lots of murder victims do it.
Says who?
Harv. He's become a detective.
Oh, good. Things were becoming a little boring around here.
She snuggled up to me, and we gazed up at the symbols, like lovers staring up at the stars.
Well, I think I see a teacup.
It's an Egyptian basket.
And that one's Japanese?
Chinese, actually. The pictograph for the sun.
Gee, who'd have thought a dying clue could be so educational? Any idea what it means?
None whatsoever. Harv says it's some kind of algebraic equation that uses symbols instead of the traditional variables.
If it's an equation, then why can't he figure it out?
Apparently, the equation makes no sense.
That makes even less sense, Chico.
Yeah, well, he's the only supercomputer I have, so I sort of have to trust him. Feel free to turn it off. I just put it up because I couldn't sleep.
No, this is kind of fun.
Yeah, maybe for the first few hours. Then it's a bit of a drag. I don't even know what I'm looking for.
It's fool's gold.
Probably. But, like I said, I don't have much else to go on.
No, in the equation.
She pointed at the screen.
FeS2, iron sulfide. That's fool's gold.
I stared at the screen. Sure enough, there in one part, about a quarter of the way through, was a symbol that looked like a stylized FE. A little farther along, about a quarter of the way from the end, was an odd-shaped symbol that, when looked at the right way, appeared to be S2. Fool's gold? Are you sure?
They make you learn chemistry in pre-med, Chico. I just don't know why they'd be separated like that. We should put them together.
Mad Magazine.
Mad what?
It's a fold-in. The inside back cover of every Mad Magazine, back when they printed magazines on paper, had this riddle. It was a picture that you folded point A to point B, And when you did, you got a new picture. That's why the equation makes no sense, because everything in the middle is subterfuge. It's fool's gold. I ran my fingers over the touchpad on the bedside table and slid the middle portion of the equation off the screen. Then I brought the two remaining portions together. They seem to fit perfectly.
So, what does it mean?
I have no idea, but I bet Harv will. I sat up and grabbed my pants from the floor. I'm gonna take a look at this in the study. Mwah. I've told you this before under different circumstances, but you, Dr. Gavada, are very good in bed.